So when I was young, many of you already know that I was a teacher for many years. And during those summers, I spent my time traveling around the country. I had a little truck, and I had camping gear, a mountain bike. Back in the early days of mountain biking, did a lot of hiking, stayed in youth hostels. And over time, I managed to get to every single state. Did not drive to Alaska. I've been there for other reasons, except Hawaii. I haven't been to Hawaii yet. One of the things that I was really surprised to learn when I was younger by doing all that traveling was just how incredibly diverse this country is, how huge it is, how I'll never forget how long it took to drive across North Dakota, which is where I was born. And so I was really looking forward to seeing North Dakota, and I realized really quickly that I was also really looking forward to getting out of North Dakota. Couldn't believe how long it takes to drive across a single state in this country. But mostly, really more importantly, just how tremendously diverse this country is. And I realized that what we have is like a whole bunch of different countries within one large country. It really helped me understand why we can be so divided here. Politically, racially, economically, culturally. I mean, I was beyond flabbergasted when I traveled into the Deep South as a young person, having grown up in upstate New York. It was shocking to me the conditions of living that are still there, no doubt, today. Every person's experience of what we call the United States of America is so very different. Though we have the word United in our name, when it comes to the reality in which we live, it doesn't often feel like we are indeed united. If you ask someone from Alabama, someone from Oregon, someone from Maine, Florida, what it means to be an American, you're most likely going to get several different stories. Every single person you talk to will tell you a different story about what it means to be an American living in this country. And I think we're seeing right now, in real time, the effects, what happens when we have a group of people who cannot agree on a cohesive narrative about who or what they are. It would be so nice if we really were one nation, under God is what it says, one nation, but we are not there yet. I think we're, you know, it's a process. We're young, we're moving. Indivisible, doesn't seem like it. I'm sure everyone probably has heard of that Aesop fable of the bundle of sticks. You guys familiar with that? A dad has three sons, and the sons are constantly fighting with each other. And one day he gives them a bundle of sticks, and he asks them to break it. And of course, each one tries. They stop their fighting. They try. They can't do it. And then he unbundles it, gives each one a stick. And of course, with one, you can certainly easily break it, right? The fable of the importance of strength, of being in community, of collective strength. I have thought a lot in recent times about what it means to be a part of something, a part of a community, whether it's one that you're born into or whether it's chosen. What does it mean to be an individual who is also part of a group? How can a group composed of individuals become a collective in a way that is healthy and productive for the parts and for the whole? Being part of a community, I would say, is at its peak greatness when we go through hard times and our friends and neighbors show up to shore us up. It's our finest hours, I would say, as groups, as communities. As a pastor in small communities over the last decade, I have been privileged to witness incredible kindness and compassion in people's darkest hours. It is the very best of humanity that we show when we are in our time of need, both in small communities and large too. I have seen tiny, small, tender acts of kindness. I've seen people do tremendously generous things and not want to draw any attention to themselves, all in the name of helping their neighbors, their friends, and strengthening the tapestry of a community in the process. These days, I'm thinking a lot, especially about the intentional communities that we join, the things that we choose to do on purpose in our lives, usually, of course, based on our interests. I realized in thinking about this that it's my partner, Sverry Caldwell, who is probably the most extreme example I can give of this. We all join intentional communities, but Sverry's dad was a ski coach who went to the 1952 Olympics in Norway. Sverry himself and all of his siblings grew up Nordic ski racing, cross-country ski. He went to college and was on the team there. Then he went to the Stratton Mountain School, where he was the cross-country ski coach for 40 years. His daughter, brother, nephew, and son-in-law all went to the Olympics for cross-country skiing. It's kind of niche. It's kind of niche. It is extreme, but for him and his family and his community, the cross-country ski world is a beautiful experience that is based on their healthy, outdoorsy lifestyle and the love of a specific sport. That's pretty hard to do, by the way. Not only did he coach teenagers, he started a cross-country ski program called the Bill Koch League in our area for kids, and he coaches there now in his retirement. And then on the other end of the spectrum, he started an elite training team, and several of those athletes are going to be competing in the Olympics in Italy starting this week. They train in Vermont in the summer, and they're on the World Cup tour and at the Olympics. We choose our communities because they offer us a shared identity. For a lot of different reasons, but they offer a shared identity. They make us feel less alone in this world that can be weirdly lonely, even though it's full of people. And also, very often, because it's something that's fun to do, to choose to be in some kind of specific community. This past decade, because of the work that I've been doing, I have thought a lot, way more, I would say, than the average human being, about the reasons why we choose to join a church, or whatever you want to call it, a meeting house, a faith community. There's lots of different language. I don't want to offend anyone. I call it church because it's easy. A church community is different than, say, a book club or a group of people who play bridge or whatever the case is, your interest, because in theory, it is meant to be organized around the spiritual formation of the person and the shaping of a shared moral life, in theory. The spiritual formation of the person, the individual, and also the shaping of a shared moral life, the community. The purpose of a spiritual community, a church, whatever, extends beyond enjoyment or skill building to questions, very, very important questions of meaning and values and responsibility. It should be, at its best, a place where we can wrestle with life's big existential questions together. Why am I here? What am I supposed to do while I'm here? What happens when we die? To me, those are the big three. Why am I here? What am I supposed to do with this life? And what will happen after I die? Oddly, ironically, strangely, I have found that a lot of faith communities actually lack a cohesive narrative about what they are and why they exist beyond sort of the continuation of something that's been going on for a very long time. And I think that's because a lot of faith communities simply don't take the time on a regular basis to reflect on what their purpose is, on why they exist. It's very easy to explain what a church does. People come together. They check in on each other, they care about each other, they help their neighbors, they try to make the world a better place. But it is a rare thing to be able to hear someone explain succinctly why a church exists, and also what the map of the future looks like, the map into the future. Why does it exist today in 2026, and what is it that we're creating that will be here when we're gone, for the kids who will be one day the adults of this world? One question that I've always liked to ask any spiritual organization is, if this whole enterprise disappeared tomorrow, like poof, gone, what would the community miss? And I don't mean the community within the church, I mean the community around the organization. If all of a sudden we woke up tomorrow and this organization was no longer here in this world, it was simply gone, what would the community miss? What would the void be if this place were suddenly to disappear? It's very important to think about what's the impact that this has beyond the walls. What would the larger community miss? The answer to that question is really, really critical, and we have to revisit it on a regular basis. And there really is no better time than during a transition like this community is going through, this congregation. There's no better time than now to do the work to stabilize the foundation by revisiting those questions, the purpose of existence. And at the same time, as individuals, it's very, very important on a regular basis to do some interior digging. Why have I chosen to be here in this place on a Sunday morning? What does it mean to be a member of a spiritual community? Am I doing a good job managing the tension between being an individual and tending to the purposes and needs of the larger community? That tension, it exists always. My needs, what the community needs, how do I manage that tension? Very often when a person arrives in a church or a faith community looking for a home, they ask questions like, does this place speak to me? Does this place meet my needs? Do I recognize myself here? But there are wider questions that better reflect, I would say, the actual work that we are meant to be doing in churches and spiritual communities, places like this. Like, what is this community asking me to learn? How is my worldview being challenged or maybe even reshaped? Who will I or who am I becoming by staying here? What is this community asking me to learn? How is my worldview being challenged or maybe even reshaped? Who am I becoming? Who will I become by staying here? It's active. Any spiritual community exists to sustain a shared moral life over time. It is formed, as we know, through participation, through patience, accountability, but it cannot be formed through personal preference or our individual personalities. This congregation, as we all know, has experienced many changes in recent years. And that is one of the reasons, not just this one, any organization, community like this one. This is why it's very, very important to have a defining core, even as an individual human being in this world. Who am I when the things that I identify myself by are stripped away? Who am I? When things fall away, because they always will in life, things are always falling away in our lives. The center is what remains. The person or the organization, thus, is better able to recover when there is a clear, defined, central narrative. This is what this is. And I do this in my own life, too. I think of myself at times in an empty room, and I'm not allowed to call myself mother, friend, sister, daughter, partner, pastor, chaplain. Every single word I use to define myself from outside sources is stripped away. I am not a Saratogian. I am not a Vermonter. I am none of those things. If all of that is gone, who am I? Try it. It's not easy. What's left when I no longer define myself by the things I do, by the people I'm related to, by my job? You'll notice as we get older that little by little these things fall away on their own. Who am I? It's a really, really good practice. In an organization like this, pastors will come and go, buildings too, possibly. There's a lot of change, a lot of shift. Members move on by choice. They die. The organization is always changing. Without an anchoring identity, it will feel like we're always flapping in the breeze. A healthy community of any kind is formed when members are able to set aside their expectations that the group is going to reflect their individual preferences or personal agendas. A healthy community requires of the individual an openness to being shaped over time by their ethical commitments and their introspective habits. We are living at a time, and perhaps we always have as Americans, when individual freedom is very, very highly valued, while at the same time, all the systems around us that sustain life, the ecological systems, the social, the moral, all of our systems are under increasing strain, and we are watching the effects of this around us daily, and it is deeply, deeply unsettling. United we stand, divided we will fall. We need to continually return to the basic truth of life, that we are all part of an interconnected web. All of us, every living thing, is part of an interconnected web. And that reality is asking us all to find, to live the delicate balance between action and restraint within community. Action and restraint. Hopefully, we choose to enter any kind of spiritual community, whatever you want to call it, whatever you need to call it. Hopefully, we enter those places to grow, not to impose, to grow. To learn how to balance. Community will teach us this if we let it. To learn how to balance freedom with responsibility and individual desires with commitment to the common good, while at the same time doing the very important introspective work, always individually and collectively. And this is how a healthy community like this one is formed and is sustainable.